Hey, welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mia, they're Slim.
Hello.
And together we'll dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we'll also take a peek at our own watch lists, all under 30 minutes or your money back.
Mia, this could be the biggest episode we've ever done this week. Saloom, which has maybe the ultimate tagline, Once Upon a Time in Africa. We also have megachurch comedy Hunk for Jesus, Save Your Soul, which is hitting Peacock, and Jaws, coming back to theaters this weekend in IMAX. We'll also have audio communiques from Venice. Mia, have you been to Venice?
No, but as an Italian-American, I feel I have been there spiritually.
I've been to Poland spiritually, only in the spiritual realm. So we're not there right now, but Brian Formo is the Letterboxd editorial producer, and we'll hear from him later. We'll also read your community reviews. As always, check out our own watch list. And maybe more important than all of that, Mia, a belated birthday to our partner in crime, Mitchell.
Happy birthday, Mitchell. Mm. Criterion, if you would like to sponsor Mitchell... You can send them a billion Blu-rays for their birthday, and they would be thrilled.
And they'll wait 10 years to watch one of them, as as is Mitchell's habit.
Saloom, directed by Jean-Luc Herboulot. Saloom on 5,800 watch lists. It is in limited theaters in New York City and LA, and then on Shudder next week for everybody. Here is the synopsis. Once upon a time in Africa. Three mercenaries extracting a drug lord out of Guinea-Bissau are forced to hide in the mystical region of Saloum, Senegal.
Mia, I loved this movie. I loved it. I watched it this week in my notes, to quote my notes, hell yes, baby! I've read comparisons from Dusk Till Dawn, Assault on Precinct 13, for this film, which is totally apt. And if you add in that tagline, Once Upon a Time in Africa, it's pretty much... like the ultimate combination of genres and locales and characters. I loved it. Is this up your alley, that combination of movies, do you think, Saloom?
Well, I'm intrigued by the mystical part.
Oh.
I'm very intrigued by that.
You ain't seen nothing yet, Mia. You ain't seen nothing yet. Mitchell, who we mentioned at the top of the show, has seen it. I think they saw it. TIFF Midnight Madness premiere.
Ooh.
Let's read Mitchell's review. What a treat. To find Jean-Luc Herboulot's genre bender constantly shifting and reinventing itself while always maintaining its daring, unique personality. Don't miss this one. And check out my interview with director Herboulot for Letterboxd, where he discusses weekend trips on mushrooms, putting African heroes on the screen, and wanting to make a movie for his 7-year-old self. So we'll have a link in the episode notes for that interview if you want to check that out.
Incredible plug, Mitchell. I love a genre bender. We have another review from Mariah. Yann Gale sizzles as the trio's lead, Chaka. Oozing charisma and pathos, Gale has the swagger of a born leader, but as the film progresses, we get a glimpse of the past that haunts him. There's a real lived-in feeling to the hyenas. Gale's chemistry with his partners made me wish we had a whole prequel series so I could keep watching their adventures.
I didn't know. So this is limited this weekend. It's hitting Shudder next weekend. So get that Shudder sub up and running. So you can relax at home if you can't make it out to New York City or LA to see this. I highly recommend it. It's one of the best movies I've seen recently. So major props.
Okay.
Hunk for Jesus, Save Your Soul, directed by Adama Ibo. This is on 5,500 watch lists. This is hitting theaters, but it's also hitting Peacock.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In the aftermath of a huge scandal, Trinity Childs and the first lady of a prominent Southern Baptist megachurch attempts to help her pastor husband, Lee Curtis Childs, rebuild their congregation. So I have not seen this yet in advance, but I have watched the trailer. Regina Hall, my queen from the Scary Movie franchise, right? Oh my God. One and two are formative.
She's amazing because she can do comedy. She can do drama. She can do anything if you just give her the chance to shine.
Mm-hmm. She is electric in the trailer that I've seen. And this is produced by Adama's twin sister, Adan Ibo, Jordan Peele, Daniel Kaluuya. And I'll be honest with you. Yeah, this is a safe space. It's just me and you. Mm-hmm. I love a good takedown of the Christian megachurch culture. Okay, so this seems right up my alley.
I do too.
And who doesn't love Sterling K. Brown, right? Also leads in this movie.
So true. Yeah, the cast is incredible, as is the crew. We have a review from Salome. Greenleaf Hive, rise. God, I had so much effing fun with this. Sterling K. Brown and Regina Hall absolutely murdered their roles dead.
Oh my God. Going to
be thinking about Regina's eyes behind that makeup for a while. Also, give Sterling more darkly comedic roles like this because it's clearly what he was born for. Jordan Seals agrees and says, so amazing. I can't believe it.
Murdered their roles dead. That maybe is the ultimate recommendation for a movie.
You know what also murdered some roles dead? The shark from Jaws.
So pleased with yourself with that segue, my God.
Yeah.
What's happening with Jaws?
What is happening with Jaws? Well, I've heard a little rumor that our little shark buddy is going to get the IMAX treatment. Oh yeah. He's coming to IMAX this weekend. So if you missed the chance to see that shark on the big screen, because I feel like a lot of us probably grew up watching it like on VHS or DVD, Blu-ray, depending on your generation. So if you've always wanted to see it on the big screen, now is your chance. Pre-game for the Fablemans.
The ultimate Fablemans pre-game Jaws. This is on 115,000 watch list. We're talking about Jaws.
Whoa.
4.0 average rating. Steven Spielberg, everyone probably knows it's about a shark, murders people. Five banger. Obviously, yeah. Jaws. I've never seen it in theaters. Many of my friends in a Discord that I'm in for my podcast are like losing their minds. They can't wait to see this in theaters in IMAX. What a great experience that is going to be. Scary, funny, it's gorgeous, and it's an all ages movie somehow.
Yeah, somehow, even though there's some child death, it's still.
I mean, there's a lot of murder. The shark needs to be arrested.
Yeah, lock him up.
Silent Dawn, I just want to read this one review. I really liked it. Imagine standing in line a warm day in June, basking in the glory on a sunny afternoon with your stomach full after a late lunch, probably pizza, and your excitement reaching a pinnacle that is consistent with every other teenager and 20-year-old in line. The trailer and the posters were enough, as everyone is out and ready to see this movie. It's about a giant shark, and it's directed by a guy that hasn't done much. You go in, you buy a massive bucket of salty and dangerously buttery popcorn, and you race to find the best seat that you can manage, and then the movie starts. It's the equivalent of stepping into a hurricane with a cheap umbrella, which signifies how unprepared you really are. I need to see this movie in theaters.
I have seen this movie in theaters.
What? So
I saw it on 35mm. What now? So I don't even need to go to the IMAX re-release.
Well. Okay. Silent Dawn. Sorry, everyone else that wants to see this in theaters. How was it? How was that experience?
Oh, it was amazing. It was very cool to see an actual print. So it's all gritty and everything.
Yeah,
and it's
grainy.
Like, wow, it's like I'm really in, I'm in the movie theaters in the
oh my God
70s.
Before we look back at last week, we have someone boots on the ground at the Venice Film Festival. And when I say boots on the ground, I mean sitting comfortably in a gondola, drifting slowly in the water, leaving us this audio communique that we're about to play. And that's our colleague, Brian Formo, editorial producer at Letterboxd. So Venice Film Fest, let's see what Brian had to say on a gondola earlier about white noise from your boy, Noah Baumbach.
Well, by the time you're hearing this, Noah Baumbach's adaptation of Don DeLillo's classic 1985 satirical novel, White Noise, will have kicked off the 2022 Venice Film Festival. White Noise puts Adam Driver into dad bod mode as Jack Gladney, a professor of Hitler studies at the College on the Hill, husband to Babette and father to four children / stepchildren. His life is torn asunder by a chemical spill from a rail car that releases an airborne toxic event, forcing Jack to confront his biggest fear, his own mortality. That airborne toxic event is a chemical explosion and not the band, but the novel is where the band's namesake came from. Greta Gerwig co-stars as Babette. Her first acting credit sits 2016's 20th Century Women. And I will note that Don Cheadle's character describes her hairstyle as, quote, important. It is. Reviews will start to populate Letterboxd as I speak from those in attendance.
Listen to that atmosphere.
That is like ASMR. The water is calm voice.
Brian Bormo's ASMR segment on Weekend Watch List.
Yeah. Wow. Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you, Brian, for your debut.
Unreal what audio the iPhone can get when you're just chilling in Venice. What's your vibe on white noise from Noah?
Oh, I am a Baumbach boy. I am excited for everything he does, even if I have wildly visceral reactions to how much I don't like it. That's how much I love him.
Okay. So Marriage Story, what else has Noah done? Marriage Story, Frances Ha.
That's one of my favorites. Mistress America is one of my favorites. Greta Gerwig is so funny in that. He's very famous for Squid and the Whale, which Owen Klein of Funny Pages is in.
Ooh.
And then the Meyerowitz stories, of course.
Oh, that's
right. That one. Kicking and Screaming, his debut with Parker Posey.
I've seen zero Baumbach movies. I'm a Noah noob.
Noah noob. We will see White Noise soon. And that'll be a funny first one for you. But yeah, I'm excited for basically everything he does. And speaking of bands, as Brian brought up Airborne Toxic Event, LCD Sound System wrote an original song for White Noise. It's going to be their first new song in 5 years. I actually don't know if it's an original song for the movie or if it's just a new song that they're like, this will be good for the Noah Baumbach apocalypse movie.
Right.
But that's kind of major. LCD Sound System is very cool. Another New York staple.
The only thing I know about LCD Sound System, didn't they retire like 5 times? Like last show ever, and then they did like 10 more shows.
Yeah, they like to do that. But they're iconic, so they're allowed to. Let's see how the movies that came out last weekend fared, some physical releases, what our community is saying, and remember, if you want your review or list potentially featured on an upcoming episode of Weekend Watchlist, just add the tag, hashtag Weekend Watchlist.
What do you want to spotlight looking back last week?
I want to spotlight 3,000 Years of Longing because this was a film that I was not huge on initially. I didn't really love it, but I saw it like a couple months ago, and now it's coming out and my friends are starting to see it, and they're all giving it like 4, 4.5 stars. Like they're all loving it so much, and it's resonating with them deeply. So I want to give it another chance. And I want to atone for kind of casting it aside in the beginning, because ultimately it's very magical to go to a movie theater and feel moved. And I can't deny that. So shout out 3,000 Years.
That's pressure when you see a movie months before your friends can see it, isn't it? It's fresh.
I know. It's like, I need to be right, even though it's not about being right. It's not about that at all. But there's that little kernel that
I felt that when I saw Last Night in Soho for a secret screening. That's the noise I made. I think. That's the noise I made in the theater, I think, when I was watching it. And I was like nervous. So I didn't even think I gave that a star rating when I left a review for it. I didn't want to be that guy.
I didn't rate 3,000 Years when I saw
it. You never know if you're going to skew someone's opinion. Like maybe they don't want to go see it. So I'll just be quiet for a little bit and just say that the dancing was nice.
Yeah, like I don't want to be a hater, but sometimes I'll indulge privately.
3,000 Years of Longing is sitting at a 3.5 average rating on Letterboxd. Austin left a review. Every year I feel there's a movie that gets middling reviews that I have to defend as one of my favorites of the year. Is Austin talking to you in this review? Is he somehow channeling your log 3 months ago? So Austin says, I'm fine with this being 2022's edition. I found myself enraptured by the story of Alethea and her djinn. Their connection and love isn't perfect, and neither is this film. But then again, what is? Tilda and Idris were on their A-game here, bringing such passion and complexity to their characters, and Miller's direction was nothing short of spellbinding. A few weeks ago, you actually spoke to Tilda and Idris. Is that true?
It is true. I can confirm that as well. I asked them if there were any films that they saw while growing up that they wanted to escape into, because Tilda's character, Alethea, is a she studies literature and stories and narrative, and her character often escapes into these stories as a means of, well, escapism. So that's what I asked about, and Tilda had this to say.
Well, the film that springs to my mind, which is a bit of a cheat because I wasn't a child when I saw it, is the great My Neighbor Totoro by Miyazaki Hayao.
Boom.
Which is about nature spirit. And I, you know, I didn't see it that long ago, but I was definitely, you know, I could drive, I think, when I saw it. But it, it's an emblematic, like it's got a brand on my heart, that film. And I show it to children whenever I can. I think it's, you know, if you see that that film when you're a small child, it's such a resource for you to draw on. Every time you see a beautiful tree, you can imagine Totoro up there playing the pipes.
That's a beautiful, you know, weirdly enough, right? Bugsy Malone had this huge impact on me. One, because when I was younger, I looked older than I was. So I was 12, I looked like 14. And I, something about the kids playing adults that really resonated with me. But also, it was the first time I saw child actors doing that. And I was like, wow. And I wanted to be an actor at that junction. So yeah, Bugsy Malone.
Bugsy Malone, Mia. What a pick Malone. From Idris.
Oh, it was so, I like my eyes went when he said Bugsy Malone. It was such a fun surprise. I was not expecting that. And then the Totoro answer, she is so eloquent and ethereal and incredible. Wow. I can't believe that you guys let me talk to them.
It was unreal. I have to give you props. I have to give Mitchell props, Gemma, and our entire editorial team. One of my favorite things about the journal work that everyone does, I love hearing actors talking about movies they like.
Me too.
I feel like so many conversations don't drift into, you know, what's in their collection? What do they like to watch? They're just like us. I loved hearing them talk about just movies that were impactful for them and maybe just movies they like watching a lot. It's fun.
Same. That's why I love work. I love working here, but I do because we get to talk about that communal love of movies, which is what I'm interested in too. Like I am always so curious about what actors and directors are watching. It's like my number one question. And now you're all letting me ask it. So woohoo.
The system
shout
works.
Out all. This is a little love fest for the Letterboxd crew.
So real quick, Funny Pages, which I loved. I gave 4.5 stars. That's sitting at 3.5 average. And I believe that's on video on demand. So if you still are on the fence, by all means, check that out, please.
Okay, now it's time to check in on the Letterboxd Top 50 of 2022 list to see what is at the top of the list for things released this year. The highest new entry this week is the Indonesian action film Mankuri Raden Saleh at number 11, which was released in Indonesian theaters last Thursday, August 25th. The title translates to Stealing Raden Saleh in reference to the Indonesian artist Raden Saleh and follows a group of young thieves plotting a heist to steal his painting. This film is now number 3 on the all-time Indonesian films list on Letterboxd.
Holy smokes. I think the other two have all been released in the last year in that top three. So very good year for Indonesian films. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We're rapidly running out of time this week. We have to get to our watch list, Mia. This is the big segment. Everyone knows that you drew Akira. Before we hear your thoughts on Akira, I just want to go through my pick, The Philadelphia Story. Yes. There's a lot of excitement about this. I thought it was okay. I didn't love it. I think I was shook by an irritating and sort of mean Cary Grant in this movie.
Yeah. No, it's scary. It is disturbing and jarring to see him be mean.
I know. I didn't like it. I felt uncomfortable. And to be honest, I don't think I was able to recover. I made a note of how many times Cary Grant said Red. That's her name in the movie. He says it maybe 300 times in his first two scenes. Yeah. I was really getting annoyed. But Liz, Jimmy Stewart's partner in crime, getting a raw deal in this movie, maybe the whole movie, especially at the end. Is this a spoiler?
It's been out for a long time.
It's been out for 100 years, so yeah, it won't get off my back. Jimmy Stewart throws a marriage proposal to Katharine Hepburn right in front of her. And she says, no, great scene. And he's like, oh, you won't marry me? Oh yeah, Liz, I have Liz that's in love with me. Maybe this will work out fine. You just proposed to someone right in front of her. She is like getting the most raw deal out of the entire movie. Katharine Hepburn is a total force of nature, loved her. I'd probably give her a marriage proposal if she made fun of me the way she made fun of Jimmy Stewart. He got annihilated in that one scene, their first scene together. So I had fun with it, didn't love it, but I'm glad I knocked this off my watch list.
Yeah, I don't love the ending, but I also understand it as a Cary Grant aficionado. I'm like, he could be mean. I don't care. I'll still say yes. Not good, but that's his power.
What about Akira? Let's hear about it. This is the big Akira watch.
I know it was the big Akira watch. This has been my watch list for years and years and years. When I worked at Amoeba Music, I ran the poster department. And one of my best business decisions was to order the Akira poster for people to buy because it was like our number one bestseller, I want to say. That was, I sold the Akira poster. So beautiful poster, beautiful movie. I loved it. I had put it off because my anime nerd brother hates it and has said, like, don't watch it. It's terrible. And so I didn't watch it.
Does your brother like the manga? Is your brother a manga nerd?
He doesn't know how to read. No, he's 23. He doesn't know how to read. But
I didn't even know how to respond to that when you said it. I was trying to gauge. How should I? What?
No, he's an anime. He like loves anime.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm kind of calling him out. I am going to fight him at Christmas. I'm going to be like, good. What the hell? I could have watched this years ago, you freak.
Yes.
He like gave it 1.5 stars. All my other friends are like five stars. And he's,
what?
I know.
I'm shadow banning your brother. I'm shadow banning your brother on Letterboxd.
I support that. I was pissed. I loved it. I loved the whole world of Neo Tokyo. I loved Kaneda's outfits. Yes. I loved all the body horror near the end and this powerful story of friendship. I thought it was a masterpiece and I cannot wait to rewatch. I'd love to see it in a theater.
Excellent.
Big success. Big success.
What else? You nailed like a million movies off your watch list. Is that true?
I did. I do think this may be a weekend watch list record. I am still atoning for forgetting to watch Death at a Funeral, which it turns out I'm actually not mad I forgot because I watched it and I did not like it. I'll just run through real quick the ones that I watched because we don't have a ton of time. So lightning round, I watched Death at a Funeral for Matthew McFadyen of Succession. Shout out to the Suckheads. I did not like this. British humor may not be for me, but afterwards I watched a lot of Tom Wamsgans' funniest moments compilations and I felt better. So yeah, you can watch that for free on YouTube. It's just Tom Wamsgans' compilations. And then I also watched Les Samurai.
Ooh.
Yeah, that is, I believe that is in the Letterboxd top 250, is it?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, yeah, so I knocked off one of those. It is maybe the coolest movie ever made. It is drenched in blues and grays, and Alain Delon is the chillest assassin, even though his name is Jeff with one F. This guy's name is Jeff. He's the coolest guy on the planet.
How about that ring of keys that he has?
I am obsessed with his ring of keys. He has this giant ring of keys that can just unlock any car, I guess. And he just does it in such a chill way. Yeah, I was mesmerized. And the influence of this film on just like film in general is massive. Like I kept thinking about Michael Mann's Thief and Drive, like all these movies with a very stoic, cool guy. So Les Samurai. And then I also watched Topsy Turvy, Mike
Holy
Lee.
Smokes.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome cast, Leslie Manville, Jim Broadbent, Timothy Spall, Shirley Henderson, and Dr. Owen Hunt from Grey's Anatomy, which I've seen 12 seasons of. So as a former theater kid, I really enjoyed this because we get to learn the origins of the very famous composers, Gilbert and Sullivan. Sideshow Bob loves them. Any Simpsons fans out there? Sideshow Bob, Slim, I know you like Sideshow Bob.
Love Sideshow Bob. Classic episode. That is a
That's
classic
close.
Episode.
Otherwise, I'd have to get out of here.
I'd be going to hang out with your brother. Be giving more one-star reviews.
Yeah, so any movie that helps me understand the psyche of Sideshow Bob, I'm a fan of. Whew. Mm. Okay, I think that's all of them. Oh, and last but not least, I will be seeing Secrets and Lies tonight. So by the time this pod drops, I will have crossed off a total of 5 movies from my watch list.
Sheesh. Secrets and Lies, very good.
Yeah, man, so that's the number to beat. I don't know.
Five? What a friggin' week. If I had a weekend watch list award, I would present it to you. But unfortunately, I don't have one.
Well, we might have to do something about that. I'm groundbreaking. I'm breaking the glass ceiling over here.
You are. So let's spotlight some community reviews tagged with Weekend Watchlist. As always, I have to spotlight, since somebody reviewed it, Marcel Deschelles, which she is on. Continuing the streak, Donald left a review. I'm so glad I got to see this at the sold-out Irish premiere as part of the Family Film Festival. The kids loved Marcel. The adults loved Marcel. We all laughed together. We all wept together. It was beautiful. Oh my God. What a moment.
Oh, that's so sweet. Marcel Lachelle, he's also setting a record because we're mentioning him a lot. So me and Marcel.
Maybe Marcel will present us with an award of some kind. Please.
Okay.
Maybe a little mini shell. Oh my God.
I am sending out some emails to Marcel. What is his email? Can we reach him?
I think it's press@a24.com.
Oh, little guy. I'll spotlight one more review. If we have the time, kind of in the opposite direction of Marcel. This is a review of Possession.
Oh.
Yeah. I love this one. This is from Brian Lai. Saw this playing locally, shout out to the Frida Cinema in Santa Ana, California, and after hearing so much about it on the 70mm podcast, I knew I had to check it out. It's exactly everything I could have hoped for and more. Not often do I call a film paradigm shifting, but this is what horror should be about. Yes, I completely agree. I love Possession, one of my favorites, and shout out Brian. And that's very cool that he got to see it in theater. I would love to see this in the theater.
What a great experience that is. Mm-hmm. Holy smokes. And thank you for the shout out, Brian. We have a traveling Possession Blu-ray that we're shipping around in our Discord.
Because it's hard to find. It is expensive.
Yeah, it is expensive. So we have a bunch of our friends just watching it for the first time and then shipping it off to the next folk who are ready to experience the magic that is Possession.
Oh, communal possession sharing. That's how I saw it too, was just like a friend who had it. And you just have to pass it around. Like that's the only way. I eventually shelled out like $50 for my own. I spent the big, yeah.
That's worth it. True. It's worth it though.
But it's one of my prized possessions.
We have to shuffle our watch list again.
Oh my God, we're running out of time for this.
We're going long. Yes. I refuse to give a refund for this podcast. I absolutely refuse. So let's head to our watch list. Let us go to Filter by Service. You know, I just want to get some streaming movies. So I'm going to go stream only. And then I am going to sort by, a little sort by drop down shuffle. So the first movie I get, I have to watch. And that movie is Two Evil Eyes. 1990. This is allegedly directed by both George A. Romero and Dario Argento. Is this for real? Is this for real? Two horror segments based on Edgar Allan Poe's story set in and around the city of Pittsburgh. That's not the first city I think of when I think of horror, but it's streaming on Roku, Vudu, Tubi, Canopy. So if anyone wants to follow along with me, let's do it.
Yay! Okay, I got a smart person movie. For smart people. So this one I actually added to my watch list because of Mariah E. Gates, the beloved film critic, did a thread about it. And it's called Hester Street, 1975, directed by Joan Micklin Silver.
This does look like a smart person poster.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is like one I'd see on a Criterion shelf somewhere if I'm getting that tour.
That's what I'm saying. A Russian emigre prides himself on the way he's molded himself into a real Yankee in the USA. Though the world he lives in, New York's Lower East Side in the late 19th century, is almost exclusively populated by other Jewish immigrants. When his wife finally arrives in the New World, however, she has a lot of assimilating to do. So this is a clean 90 minutes. Easy. And it stars Carol Kane.
Love a good 90 minute.
Yes. Movies. Love a good 90. And yeah, this is highly recommended by film critics around. It's also very underseen. Like I try to watch a lot of movies directed by women and I had never even heard of this. So that's huge. I'm very excited to watch this one.
Streaming on Canopy. Get your library cards out.
That's for smart people. <It is. laughs> Another science, a smart person movie.
Thank you so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. You can follow Mia, Slim, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. And if you have the time, maybe consider rating the podcast on Spotify or leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps spread the word about the show.
Thank you to our crew, and thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. Thanks to Jack for the facts and Sophie Shin for the episode transcript. And to you for listening. Weekend Watchlist is a Tape Deck production. This is a Tape Deck podcast.